The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. You've joined We the People Radio. Oh, let's see. Our guest doesn't have a call-in number, but we'll call her. Okay, we're starting off just like we usually do.
Heck yeah.
My telephone's on. The text messages are coming in.
We'll get organized later.
The chaos is all around us. Hey, so you can find all of our information, because that's actually accurate and ready and updated, on wethepeopleradio.us. And we've got kind of an interesting assortment today, two things that don't actually go together. But we have author Edwin Black, who's going to be calling in here momentarily. At least that's the rumor. He called us an hour ago. We had a little time zone issue. He could only spend a few minutes with us, but I had requested an interview with him like a year ago. And so all of a sudden the opportunity came available, so we'll take it. And then we're going to spend the balance of the time with Lauren Price from Veteran Warriors out of Florida. So that'll be super fun. Different, totally different topics. Mr. Black is a best-selling author, and seriously, this guy, I mean, I think the only year he missed writing a book, let's see, was 2000 and 2000. Nope, he did one in three. 2000.
He's got over a million books in print.
Yeah, because yeah,
he's
look,
been kind of busy.
It's like 2001, 2003, 4, 6, 8, 9, another one in 2009, 10, 11, 12, 12, 13, and he's working on another one. Imagine that.
And that's in between the editorials and all the other things he writes.
I know it. He just had a ton of stuff, but I had read, and it was a year ago. I have not, I didn't have a chance to go back when his guy shot me a message today and said he's going to call you today. I was like, oh no. He writes amazing stuff. Well, Financing the Flames, I think it might have been an article about that. It was The War Against the Weak, IBM and the Holocaust. He does a lot of that kind of thing. Financing the Flames, here's a little clip from it. How tax-exempt and public money fuel a culture of confrontation and terrorism in Israel. Pulls the cover off the robust use of U.S. tax-exempt, tax-subsidized, and public monies to format foment agitation, systematically destabilize Israel defense forces, and finance terrorists. I was like, well, that's kind of interesting. So I don't know what his new book is, and we're going to ask him if, in fact, he's calling. So I guess we should do our little pleasantries here. I'm Aaron Ryan.
And Bill Cundiff.
And Bob Martin.
Sorry, Bob. Yeah, go ahead. Could you answer the phone and talk on the radio, please? It's kind of like asking somebody a question when their mouth is full. So anyway, who have we, Bob?
That would be Edwin Black.
Right on. Well, I just told everybody what I had about him on the website. Welcome, Mr. Black.
Thank you very much for having me.
I was so surprised because I had written, I think it was actually the end of 2014, and then whoever does your email had written back and said, well, let's try 2015. Well, no, it's 2016. So I forget what article I had read. It was something great, and I thought, we got to get that guy on. So I guess you're working on another book, because you do one or two every year, for heaven's sakes.
Busy. Right.
Like a busy guy. Does your family ever see you?
Yes, they do, usually while I'm traveling.
There you go.
In fact, if you wanted to see my my travel and lecture schedule, I do about 200 lectures a year. You could go to edwinblack.com, and on that website, on the left-hand side, there's a link to my events 2016.
I'm so. On it now, and you're all over the place.
I am. So, how are you today?
We are super. And so we had no needs as far as what we wanted to hear from you. We wanted you to promote your book.
Yeah, I'm curious what you're working on.
Yeah, and talk about what it is you do, because I thought, gosh, I wonder how many people. I just didn't want you to be a hidden resource that people didn't hear of.
Well, I've published 11 or 12 bestsellers. IBM and the Holocaust, Banking on Baghdad, War Against the Weak on Eugenics, The Farhood on the Arab-Nazi Alliance in the Holocaust, internal combustion on the history of energy and our unnecessary addiction to oil, the transfer agreement, British Petroleum and the Red Line Agreement, which where I had exclusive access to the corporate archives of British Petroleum and detailed the West secret pact to take over Mideast oil. And right now I'm working on a another book involving the Ottoman Empire and the history of the Middle East, with a focus specifically on Israel. And I take this history all the way back to 4 billion years to the formation of the continents. So I explain how Israel was a land in between the two breakaway continents of Asia and Africa. It's in between. And then I discussed the entire history of the Ottoman Empire with respect to Israel and its development, and many of the fallacies which are today misunderstood about Israel and its history. That's what I'm working on right now. So it involves a lot of Turkish resources and Jewish resources, German resources, American diplomatic papers, etc.
Things that are super, super current right now.
Yes, they are, because we're seeing an area that cannot be reconciled as a result of historic legacies of hate. And so while peace is not possible in our time or in the time of your children, non-belligerency is, and peaceful coexistence may be possible. But to do that, first we have to confront the truth about our history before we can attempt to remedy our future. And the history, of course, is that the land in question now is the former Turkish colonies, which are now disputed, which were taken after World War I by the world community after many genocides by the Turks against Armenians, Bulgarians, and many others, is part of an effort to give self-determination. And lo and behold, the Arabs were supposed to get Syria, and the Jews were supposed to get a Jewish Palestine. And going back, you need to look at text to the Pact of Umar in 700. It was decided that the Jews would be, and the Christians would be dhimmis and never be allowed to be equals within the Arab midst. And as a result of that, a couple of things happened. One, France blocked the declaration of an Arab state in Syria after World War I, despite the fact that the Arabs were to get one under King Faisal. It actually existed briefly. And two, before the Jewish Palestine could be gone into effect under League of Nations mandate, Great Britain chopped off 80% of it and created a brand new country out of this Turkish territory, and the name of that country was Jordan. At that time, it was known as Transjordan. So when Syria blocked the existence of Arab, when France blocked the emergence of Arab Syria, they gave Iraq to Faisal. They declared him king. His brother was made the king of Transjordan, taken from Jewish Palestine. But neither of these guys were from Iraq or Jordan. They were both Hashemites from the Arabian Peninsula who were being rewarded for their attacking of the trains during the Lawrence of Arabia period, which you've all seen in the film. So this is part of what I'm investigating and tracking and just laying out the history as opposed to the arguments.
You know, in light of a lot of what you just said, and the fact that so much of that has happened before a lot of folks that are involved in this were even born, what do you think the chances of a peaceful solution what chance is there of a peaceful solution? I mean, when it comes to,
there is,
you know,
a chance for a peaceful solution in our lifetime, but there's no chance of peace. In other words, we've already got a peaceful solution between Jordan and Israel, mm-hmm. and Egypt and Israel. You wouldn't call it a genuine peace like we have with Germany or Japan or even with Turkey. What we have is non-belligerency and peaceful coexistence. But remember, the lousiest peace is better than the best war. In order to achieve peace, historically we are shown that the only way to accomplish this with the current players is to stop paying for non-peace. Right now, Israel is exporting technology, inventions, food, tourism, intellectual property, art, culture. Saudi Arabia is exporting oil. Egypt is exporting tourism. But the main product that the Palestinian Authority is exporting is terrorism. And we're paying for it. I wrote a recent book. My last book was called Financing the Flames. Every time somebody commits a knife attack or a mass murder or blows up a bus in Israel, they go on official Palestinian Authority salary. And the more people they kill, the more people, the more money they make monthly. And this money comes out of taxpayers in the United States, the EU, Great Britain. It's about 16% of the Palestinian budget. It's the best wages you can make. And we're paying for this. We're paying for all the incitement, all of the violence. So if we stop paying for it, which could come about because oil is down to $25 to $35 a barrel, depending upon which oil you're talking about. And oil will soon not be the dry, could soon fall from the number one determinant of Middle East politics. If we just stop funding these bad programs and let people work it out, remember, 20% of Israel are Arabs, citizens. Some 30,000 Palestinians a day go to work in jobs in Israel, in the medical in industry, transportation, tourism. That's ground zero for coexistence, where Jew and Arab can work together in a factory, in a hotel, in a high-tech company, in a studio, in the normal activities of life. This is ground zero, and this is indeed the this is indeed where peace is made. These are the true peace warriors. But when there's a kleptocracy in the Middle East, mm-hmm. where people are paid enormous amounts of money to not participate in peace, well, then that's like asking Saudi Arabia to stop pumping oil. That's what they do for a living.
Mm-hmm.
So until Americans become wise about how their money is being spent, we will never see peace in the Middle East. But once they do, once they let the primary parties work together between themselves, it is possible to have peaceful coexistence.
How do you see Russia's new role in Syria? And you know, it's not going to stop there. But where do you see that going?
It's not a new role, it's a vastly enhanced role, and that's because Syria is now falling apart, it's completely fragmented.
Mm-hmm.
You have heard about one or two or three or four of these militias and fighting groups. There are many, many more. There could be as many as 10 just in Latakia. Different groups, different flags, different emblems, different philosophies, different loyalties. They were endangering the Russian naval base, which Russia needs on the Mediterranean. Russia wants to project power in the Middle East as it once did. We have abdicated the stage. When America abdicates the stage, history has shown that the world ends up in chaos. Remember, we didn't enter World War One until the very end. And once we did, World War One ended. We didn't enter World War Two until we were forced to by the bombing of Pearl Harbor. And we declared war on Japan, and as a result of that, the Germans declared war on us. And once we did, World War II was brought to an end, not completely through our efforts, but in large part with the Russians on the east, but with us on the west, and of course with other groups, the British and the Free French. When America abdicates the stage, for whatever reason, whether because we're tired of being involved in overseas entanglements, whether we want to focus more on home, whether we just have bad leadership, when we abdicate the stage, the proscenium arch falls down and the seats spontaneously combust. That's the reality, because there are so many groups in the world that are still tribal, mm-hmm. that are still highly nationalistic, that is still ethnically based. And America is the melting pot that wants to take the best of all of these countries and form one great nation. We've done a pretty flawed job of that over the years. You know, the Constitution is a very flawed instrument. When the Constitution was written, most Americans were not allowed to vote. Women were not allowed to vote. Blacks were not allowed to vote. Most of the inhabitants of the United States colonies were not allowed to vote. And we've been perfecting that. In the last century, women got to vote. Blacks got to vote. The Constitution is getting, and our circle of entitlement is getting better and better, broader and broader. More people are being able to participate in our society. So we have taken the best of the planet and made America over some many, many struggles of injustice that we've had against America, against Native Americans and Japanese and Africans and many, many others. We have taken the best, and of course, in order to take the best, we've had to overcome the worst. And where have we inherited the worst? From the contributions made from all over Earth, where people have come, and they've not parked their prejudices at the shore. As a result of bringing prejudice in, it takes America that much longer to overcome the prejudices which are imported into our nation by many other theories of primacy and supremacy. What our country wants is equality. Equality for all. And in the current discussion about migration, what's important is not where a person is from, but whether a person believes in tolerance, whether a person believes in live and let live. These are the driving factors, not the color of the scarf, not the color of the skin, not the color of the flag from which they fled, but their ability to come and live with their neighbors in peaceful coexistence and equality. When my parents came to this country after the Holocaust in World War II, they came to live and to thrive and to be part of a nation. When many other groups came, all the waves wanted to live in this country and participate in the country without carving out enclaves, even though there were many, cultural enclaves for the Italians, the Irish, the Chinese, etc. Above that was the determination that they were part of a country. They could both retain their national and ethnic character and be part of a great, thriving America. So we have been able to take the best of the world, from all the continents, from all the traditions, from all the tribes, and attempt to get past, weed out the prejudices, and try to emphasize the perfections.
So how do you explain in the last, let's just say the last 10 years, the the, I don't know, almost uprising that's happening in this country against our government, against the establishment. With all that being said, it just seems like a lot of people that come over here now aren't coming over here to assimilate, aren't coming over here to enjoy our way of life.
They want to carve out their niche and have...
Yeah, they want to bring...
Can't allow... Well, you've asked a couple of different questions. What has caused the unrest in the American electorate? One is the diversification of forms of communication. We don't have four networks anymore.
Right.
We probably have 400 video platforms that people can view. People don't have just four newspapers or one or two within their city or three or four nationally that they care about. There are thousands. They can view them on their phones. They don't have to buy them. We have the internet. We have WordPress. We have some very dubious forms of social media such as Twitter and Facebook, which are Promethean. Every Twitter and Facebook is kind of like fire. It can bring great benefits to mankind, and by the same token, it can bring a great curse to the mankind. It can warm you, and it can burn you. But the result is more people can express themselves, can talk to each other. A guy in a basement in Brooklyn or Paris or Warsaw can put a piece of information out that'll instantly get to people on the other side of the planet. So more people are more informed today than they were 10 years ago,
mm-hmm.
when the internet was still in some of its formative stages. Long before social media came on the scene. And as a result of that, people can now share their anxieties, their upset, their outrage. What's important here, and this is really important, is we can't just talk to ourselves. By talking to yourself, to your circle, to those who agree with you, you are inevitably reinforcing all the stereotypes downward, and you don't have the free exchange of ideas. And all the self-certification that comes from people talking to each other in their own circle just means that there's no room for a different opinion, and without a different opinion knocking at your door, you can't determine whether you need to allow that differing opinion in. And now people have discovered that they're voting for people who don't represent them, who say one thing at high noon and who make another secret deal at midnight after we've gone to sleep and laws are reconciled and put in contrary to what they say. Deals are made. Principles are lost. Everybody's got an agenda. And what we see now is that the people become agitated with the candidates the moment they see their lips move. That's the moment.
Yeah. True.
When they see their lips move, they know they're being played. Because scripted politicians, we've had them. And people are now aware that scripted politicians are servants of the multimillionaire forces behind them that are giving tens of millions of dollars. When you take tens of millions of dollars, you owe something. So people are going with the outsiders, like the Ben Carsons, the Bernie Sanders, the Donald Trumps, the Cruises, and they're doing this because they're now exercising their free will to choose. They don't need to choose just ABC or CNN. They can go to Vice on the internet. They can go to this station that we're speaking on. They can go to 1,000 different places, and when they're done with that 1,000, they can go to a new 1,000. And as long as they're willing to listen to some other idea, they can form an independent conclusion, and they can validate their worst fears. And their worst fears are that our system is broken. It's the best system on planet Earth. It's the best system, but we want it better, and it won't get better until change comes to this country. People have wanted change. They've spoken of change, but they've been unable to achieve change. And now we may be on the cusp of change in energy, in social policy, in peaceful coexistence with each other, in all sorts of reforms that this world needs.
And
I got
just
one more question.
It's really funny. I just sent somebody a message, and I said, I know he's going to have to go suddenly. So we're like, I don't know when this is happening. You know, I was looking at your most recent book, The Financing the Flames, and you were talking about charitable organizations like Ford Foundation, George Soros, Open Society, and that kind of thing. I wanted to make sure.
Well, the New Israel Fund.
Yep. I was
the George Soros, but many other groups. Yes, go ahead.
No, well, I was going to say, you know, that is something that a lot of our audience would know about, and I wanted to you to give them you know, whatever information you'd like to about that, because I think that's a
we need a complete reform in the way taxpayers are paying for political activities against the will of what people really desire. A charitable organization should be engaged in charitable activities. They should open soup kitchens. They should feed the homeless. They should struggle for equality. They should struggle for individual justice. They should not agitate to overthrow the accepted order of equality and justice for all people. They should not try to be involved in a nation-making. They should not be sponsoring terrorism. They should not be sponsoring boycotts against our allies. And so we need, it isn't that you're not allowed to boycott. Anyone can boycott. If you've got 25 cents in your pocket, you can decide where to put that 25 cents. But taxpayers don't have to foot the bill. And right now, there is such a surge of rewriting of history, of fake history, of fake narratives. This idea that the Palestinians are somehow connected to the Philistines because the word Palestine is Palestine, it's from Philistines. But the Philistines were from the 13th century, and they fought against Ramses III in Egypt. They have nothing to do with the Islamic conquest of the Middle East in the 7th century, which replaced the Eurasians and with Arabs. That's a different idea. And the idea that that the Germans in Southwest Africa had a heroic struggle against the Herero or the Namibians, what we call now Namibia, and they've got all these crusades and statuary. This was a war of genocide fought in 1908 against the innocent Africans. That was a staging ground, a rehearsal for the Holocaust. The idea that Turkey did not commit genocide against the Armenians. It was just some kind of a military operation when innocent men, women, and children were marched along the railways from the Berlin to Baghdad railway and were summarily starved to death, beaten to death, raped to death, and bayoneted to death, and the babies were smashed against rocks and trees. This is the reality of what occurred. We could see cops and we could see cowboy and Indian movies where, you know, it's just the innocent wagon train going through and being attacked by the Indian, without mentioning the fact that the Indian was being uprooted time after time. There is so much that is false that we have to fight for facts. And that is a losing fight. We are losing the war of factual history. We are losing the war of insight into our past. And therefore, we are floundering as we attempt to define and sculpt our future, because we really can't see what has gone before. So that is my role. I'm continually trying to bring out in the clearest form what has actually occurred. I'm trying to separate the weeds from the trees in the forest so people can see the trees within within the forest. And while I'm doing it, a lot many more are not doing it, and it's a losing battle.
Well, they're,
as long
unfortunately,
as we're capable, we will continue trying.
Yeah,
thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to speak to you.
Well, thanks very much.
Thanks for coming on.
Anytime. You're welcome back anytime. We've put your link to your books. It's edwinblack.com. There's a ton of information there, and I hope you are on the West Coast and we're able to hear you speak sometime.
Well, thank you very much. I hope to be on your show another time. Bye-bye.
Thanks very much. Holy cow.
There you go. There
so
you have
if,
it.
So if you didn't learn anything, you're an idiot.
Yeah, go to the site, read a book.
And if you don't have to go look up any of those guys, then you're an idiot too. Because I was like, the who? I remember the Philistines, but mostly we just joked about it. Like, don't be a Philistine. You know,
mm-hmm.
I was like, well, I got to go back and look at what the Philistines were really doing.
Well, but if you go to his website, there's a whole list of all his books.
Oh my gosh, and there's a zillion of them.
Yeah, you can definitely get educated on what's led us to this point. What's got us here?
And if you're driving or doing something else or whatever, WeThePeopleRadio.us, our usual website for today's show. I've got all his stuff linked on there. And what was the other thing? Oh, there was an article that I read back in 2013 that caused me to ask him for an interview. I will find it and put it on there because I remember it was awesome. I just don't remember what it was about, and I couldn't find it this morning. So, that being said, we're shifting gears. We're going to take a break here that we should have taken a while ago, but we were afraid to take a break. We were afraid he'd ditch us. So anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We're coming back with Lauren Price, and we're going to talk about veteran issues. You're going to love it. Well, actually, you're probably going to get mad, so pour some decaf and come back. WeThePeopleRadio.us.
What shall we do about them? When they move into your neighborhood, they take over, but they want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body.